Now, before we go, every time we take a step toward equality in this country, be it in terms of marriage or anti-discrimination ordinances or any number of other things, the bias block of the religious right continues to scaremonger and fundraise around wild scenarios of assaults on Christianity. Perhaps most crass have been the likes of Family Research Council President Tony Perkins, drawing parallels between the alleged coming restrictions on the faith in America and the very real, terrifying, and deadly attacks on Christians overseas. But as long as extremist words don't have consequences, perhaps extremists can be forgiven for using them. But what about when there are consequences? This past week in Connecticut, a Christian pastor was setting out little American flags on his church's property early on the Sunday of Memorial Day weekend when he was shot 3 times. As the Reverend Augustus Seeley lay in his hospital bed, Hartford police released the following statement, I'm quoting, "Some language used in the incident and given where it was in front of a church known to be accepting of our LGBT community, it led us to have concern that this is a hate crime." End quote. If the police are right, it would be hard not to see this as a genuine attack on Christianity. Now, you may say this is one random incident, and that preliminary speculation doesn't a proof of motivation make. But just the week before, in Fountain Hills, Arizona, pastors of 8 Protestant churches ganged up to publicly condemn the progressive Christianity of United Methodist, the Fountains Church. They even bought newspaper ads. What kind of heretical goings-on are these Christians so up in arms about? Well, Fountains Church does welcome LGBT people of faith. It also shares its space with a synagogue and Buddhist center and regularly hosts events in partnership with the local Muslim community. Ample proof, I guess, that Fountains Church just doesn't get Christianity. But still, I would go so far as to call this ridiculous campaign an attack on Christianity. And what about Mill Valley, California? The local United Methodist Church displayed the following message on its signboard. Jesus had 2 dads, and he turned out just fine. Provocative? Of course. But vandals quickly painted over the 2 dads part of the sign, censoring this pro-gay message. "We send best wishes for a full recovery to the Reverend Seeley in Hartford. We also celebrate the fact that despite concerted allegedly Christian attacks, the Fountains Church is about to break ground for the new building necessitated by the rapid growth of its membership." But as theocrats and even some prominent presidential candidates blather on about the threat basic human rights for everyone pose to their particular brand of fundamentalist Christianity, it's worth noting that real attacks are happening. Granted, they are not comparable to the horrors faced by people of various faiths in other countries. But they are also not necessarily disconnected from the verbal assaults on inclusive progressive faith these loudmouthed conservatives seem compelled to continue. Oh, and as for that church in Mill Valley, a squad of Boy Scouts quickly turned up to clean the vandalized signboard, and the fresh new message now reads, "All welcome. Vandals too." And just one more thing. This weekend marks the end of a long and productive tenure for our friend Kevin Ekstrom, who made an invaluable contribution to religious journalism at Religion News Service for 15 years and where he served as editor-in-chief since 2006. Across the years, we have called on Kevin countless times to provide perspective, insights, and commentary on the most important news stories of the day. And despite his many responsibilities, he has never refused. In fact, Kevin graciously guest hosted State of Belief last year, and his end-of-the-year news roundups have long been an annual tradition around here. As Kevin moves into his new position as communications officer at the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C., I know he will contribute to the growth of an institution that has become so important to not just the spiritual, but the civic life of our nation's capital and beyond. It is no overstatement to say that this move will impact how we produce the show. But we will continue to rely on Religion News Service, as readers and journalists have for 80 years now. And we'll certainly have Kevin on with us again soon in his new capacity. But for right now, let me say with absolute sincerity, congratulations, good luck, and most of all, Kevin, thank you. Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. If you've made a donation to State of Belief Radio this week, I want to express my sincere gratitude. The ongoing financial support of our listeners is essential to keeping this show on the air. If you find value in what you're hearing, I urge you to join us and our other generous supporters. Please visit stateofbelief.com. That's stateofbelief.com. Stateofbelief.com is also where you can sign up for our free weekly podcast and find links mentioned during the show. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and share the stories you find compelling with your friends so they can be a part of this conversation as well. We really do need you. We need you to help spread the word. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And be sure to join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief. The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. See what he was.